to the Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
Thank you for the introduction. Thank you all for coming here. And especially I should thank the good folks at the Berkman Center for hosting me this summer. I spent some time here and now I get a chance to present some of the work that I've been recently doing to you. It's about a lot of work that I've been doing together with Creative Commons relating to issues of tracking open licensing on the internet. I'm focusing more specifically on Creative Commons licenses, though the paradigm could be extended to anything else, obviously, as well. And another thing that I'm very interested in is remixing, reuse, more specifically for what you might call cultural content rather than reusing software and so on, although, again, there are many parallels over there. So I will start with presenting a simple view of what I think the global digital commons consists of. And I will present that my view of how basically at the center of it there is a large shared pool of resources. I will try to show you how we try to estimate how large that pool is, how free that pool is, in the sense that there is many shades of what we call the commons. There's many different shades of gray when it comes also to open licensing. And there is different licenses that grant more freedoms to their users of content and others that grant less freedoms. And therefore, we're trying to look at what the balance is in that respect. Then I will talk about a specific study about how large-scale reuse and remix is actually leveraging a shared pool of that type inside a specific community, and what kind of relationships are created through remixing between the creators of content and the remixers of content. And I will also touch on an issue which is very much in my interests currently, which is what is the role of contests, competition, and so on, in a context which is otherwise very much based also on cooperation, which is what we might call the sharing economy, as Lessig and others have called it. So some of the references that I'm using for this work, some of the works that I currently just have on my mind, are obviously in 2004, Lessig's Free Culture book, which came out a while after also Creative Commons as an initiative started. In 2008, a book came out by David Bollier, who was also presenting over here, about the viral spiral, about the history of the whole movement, if you like, and how it developed. And you might think that if somebody is writing a history of a movement, that means the movement is maybe getting a bit old, in the sense that it might also need to reflect on where it has been and how much it has achieved so far. And that is actually one of the main drivers behind the work that I have been doing. Also, Lawrence Lessig published his Remix book, which talks a lot about some of the same issues that I will talk about today, although my perspective tends to be a more quantitative perspective. Since in the past I have been working a lot, before I got involved into all this, in the past my research was more focused into the creation of new markets, studying how markets are created, especially for technology-based goods, and doing more quantitative work there, studying how prices develop and so on. And I'm now more interested in seeing how these things work, how resource exchange, if you like, works in non-market situations. Also, if you haven't looked at that, I would highly recommend the memoirs that Victor Stone, the administrator, initiator of the CC Mixter community, wrote on his experience with that online remixing community, which has a lot of interesting perspectives in there about the nature of remixing, what we mean by sharing economy and so on. So this is just a picture I sketched in my mind about how to present all the bits of work that I will show to you today. The digital commons necessarily at the center of it requires a shared pool of resources. This could be the files, the methods, the techniques, the tools that people share in a manner which makes it legal for others also to use, in a manner which encourages use and reuse. It is not, of course, not only a pool of resources, it is also consists of people, here depicted as red dots, who on the left side make decisions on what kind of new resources to contribute to the pool. They will declare a different license, which could be a Creative Commons license or other license, which they attach to the content. And that, of course, creates possibilities on the right side for people who want to use the content, to remix it or to otherwise use it and forward it. And sometimes, as you will see on the top left, top right-hand corner, they will actually feed that content back into the pool. Now, one of the very basic questions that I was starting with when I was starting looking into this kind of research about 3 years ago was, well, how large is that pool? What has been the global impact, if you like, of Creative Commons as a licensing initiative? How many people use it? Where in the world do they use it? And how fast is that pool of more freely available content? How fast is that pool growing? And how much is contributed perhaps back to the pool? In that sense, how much remixing is taking place using these licenses? Can we measure that? Another related question is, of course, as I said, how open, how free is the pool? Depending on the licenses that anybody will use that feeds anything into the pool, the total sum of the pool is going to become more openly accessible or not. If we all between us start deciding that we want to use more restrictive licenses, then, you know, the population of people who use that pool and they depend on it for their work or hobbies or otherwise are going to find that there will be more restrictions attached to most of the works they will find online. And therefore, you could say that the pool as a whole is actually going to become less free or more free. Again, the question is, can we try to measure that? One of the big issues, of course, with Creative Commons is, and generally with open licensing, is that there's no central repository, there is no central registry, although there is some efforts to that end more recently. And anybody in the world can use any such license, and they can publish it anywhere they feel like. It's pretty difficult to answer these kind of questions. So it depends. One approach would be, of course, to try to count everything that is out there. And in principle, that can be done. You know, one can try to crawl the web for Creative Commons licensed content. I do not have a good estimate for how long this will take and what kind of resources that will take. And there is people who are doing crawls of the web, and potentially one can at some point work with them, try to find out what the balance is, what the total is. The other approach, which I've been using more with my collaborators, is to use estimates. Just think about what estimates we can find online for what the total sum could be. Look into specific communities also that we know host a lot of Creative Commons content and try to understand how much content they are hosting. Compare that to other estimates we get to get at least some ballpark figures. And more recently, we thought about how we can combine that with external reports and local knowledge in different countries around the world. For example, there might be large repositories of Creative Commons licensed content in some countries that I am not aware of, and maybe are not indexed by any search engine, maybe they're not listed anywhere. But of course, people in different jurisdictions would know of these, and they would actually come and alert you to that and say, you should also take into account this repository, that repository, or you should take into account the fact that the licenses are perhaps perceived differently in different countries around the world, which is actually also a related topic that I cannot develop on very much today, because it's a long topic, but I'll touch on that as well. Generally, there is, the way I see it is there is this trade-off, as I show on the upper right-hand side, the trade-off basically between scale and accuracy and richness of the data set. If you try to answer questions of the nature, how much is there on the internet, it's more difficult to get an accurate estimate of that. And the data set that you will get, whatever data set that is not going to be as rich. You know, the metadata is not always going to be there. You will not always know what kind of content the numbers are referring to. If you look now into a specific community, you will get a much smaller subset. But inside that smaller community, you will be able to get probably more information about who the users are, why they're doing what they're doing, why they are licensing in a more open manner, why they are remixing the content, and so on and so forth. So when it comes to trying to characterize the global pool, the data that we have is out of necessity and for pragmatic reasons, basically not as accurate and not as rich. We tried different ways of thinking about, we thought of different ways of how we could do that and tested different methods. And what I'm going to present to you today is an online platform that we've been building more recently. That means myself and some people affiliated with the National University of Singapore, where I'm based, together with Creative Commons in San Francisco, with some small grant from the Social Science Research Council, with support from the Ford Foundation, and so on. The idea behind the platform has been to, on the one hand, make a lot of raw data that we have been collecting for a long period now available in a manner which is easy for anyone to view, using their own reports or research, or criticize, of course, or complement with other sources of data. And also to allow for people to annotate the data, write commentary on that, combine it with whatever other material they may have. That is because we realized that, I don't know whether any of you here have seen anything that came out of this project before. The project is often, we often call it Creative Commons Monitor or CC Monitor. And there's been many versions of that. I've presented in a few past iSummit conferences and a few other conferences. In the beginning, what we used to do is just collect data online and just present it, process it in Excel or other statistics packages, actually, and then present it in conferences. There was nothing available really online. Then very often when I would present some data on the global spread of Creative Commons, people come back to me and say, yes, but you know, you didn't take into account the fact that the situation in China is different, or the situation in Brazil is different, and we don't look at open licensing the same way, maybe, that an American peer or a European peer would look at them. And we try to build this platform to allow for all these local perspectives to be included together with the data in a wiki-based repository of knowledge. Think of it a bit as a live report on the state of open licensing, which is currently limited to Creative Commons. In the future, could include more licenses. So the best would be if I can actually show it to you right now. Obviously, you have some problems with the resolution, but it's not particularly pretty yet. This is in pre-release stage. Let me make that clear. And people who are interested in contributing are very welcome to do so. But this is not quite public yet, although you can access it. You can blog it, yeah. But I would generally mention that it is actually something which is still under development. And I will explain what this development actually consists of. A very nice guy that I've been working with, who's currently based in Shanghai, but who is going to join also the National University of Singapore, Hao Yu Bai, I hope I pronounced his name correctly, has written some code here together with people from CC in San Francisco to make this a live data wiki, right? Which is something that I haven't seen before, or at least is not very common, I think. So if I click on the world overview page, I will see an update. This is a very recent update. You can see the date here is from the 6th of this month, of the of an estimate of the global license adoption around the world. This estimate comes to about 170 million Creative Commons licensed items around the world. Now, there is a whole history and methodology behind how we come up with these and basically why we use this method in this particular instance. There's many ways in which one can try to do this. None of these are perfect. In fact, most of them are very far from perfect. In this particular case, this data is based on a large series of Yahoo backlink search or inlink search, which means that we, in this particular case, we ask Yahoo how many pages link to the Creative Commons deeds pages. Generally, pages link to a specific Creative Commons deed page when somebody is licensing a piece of content under that particular license. That is not always the case, and you can find many examples where that may not actually be true. But generally speaking, this helps us get a ballpark figure. Also, because there is deeds pages for all the different jurisdictions, because there is licenses for different jurisdictions around the world, this actually helps us then get a feel for how many people are using the different licenses and how much of this can be attributed to use of the French license or the Spanish license or the Brazilian license or the Chinese license and so on. Now, I don't want to delve too much into the methodology behind this because there is actually a lot, as I said, that can be improved with that. But we have found this particular estimate coming from the Yahoo backlink search to be some of the more useful and seemingly more reliable. They are not as volatile as other estimates. We've been tracking these numbers actually for over 3 years now. If anybody's interested more in the technicalities behind that, you're free to contact me. Now, in addition to the totals, which you can see broken down by license, you will also see that there is something called the freedom score. I will explain that as well. Now, what you can see also is a map that is created. This is also auto-generated based on the data of adoption of Creative Commons around the world. Now, what's neat about all this is that still here we are looking into a wiki, right? Users who can register for the wiki can actually go in and write their own comments. They can write their own perspectives on the data. On the other hand, the tables you see up here and the maps you see are actually auto-generated. And we can actually set that to refresh every day. Although currently we don't do it quite yet because we are testing it. In the map, you can see, for example, some interesting things. First of all, you can this. Let me mention that this does not include the use of the unported Creative Commons license, which is a large percentage of Creative Commons usage. That's a license, for those who are not familiar with it, that is not attributable to any specific jurisdiction. This is a license that can, in principle, be used in any country around the world. That's used often by people in countries that don't have yet country-specific Creative Commons licenses created, but it also has been used historically very much in the US and otherwise. Now, this picture here is based solely on the licenses that have been ported to a specific jurisdiction. So when we look at United States, here the total number is about 7 million. That number reflects use of the more recently introduced US version of the Creative Commons license. The darker colored countries are those that have a higher volume, according again to these estimates, which, as I said, is far from perfect. We see also, of course, North America. We see Western Europe with pretty large numbers, Spain, France, We can also zoom into that and get a more clear view of the numbers. Brazil, also most notably, those who, if you have any familiarity with the Creative Commons movement of licenses, you would know that Brazil is special in a few respects, in that it has a great support and a great team working there. Asia, which is of particular interest to me, perhaps to some of you here as well, also exhibits some significant growth. Actually, in terms of actual growth, again, based on this particular data, Asia has one of the fastest growths. So not only economically, but also in terms of open licensing, which is interesting. But that could be, of course, related to the fact that more and more people are getting online. But the largest numbers are in South Korea, Japan, and Taiwan, which again will not be surprising based on these particular countries and the fact that there are strong teams there. At least I'm more familiar with the Taiwan and South Korea local teams of volunteers who promote the Creative Commons licenses there. And they are very strong teams that are actually doing that work. And with some growth in other parts of Asia, some are slower than others, obviously. Now, if I go into any specific country, if I choose Spain here, I can click on that and it will lead me to an article stub for Spain. So for each one of the currently 52 jurisdictions, you can see the long list here, we actually created an automatically generated stub which contains some data. It contains some rankings. I'll talk a bit also about rankings because that is something that gets people sometimes up in arms, but usually excited about it. And as you see, this would be an article stub. So this would be an article where there's no article yet. There's only the automatically generated data. I can show you an example of what a real article would look like. If I go for Singapore, I'm heading the efforts in Singapore. So obviously that was easier for me to write. So if I go to Singapore, you'll see that there is an article here for Singapore. Right, which we wrote, most of it I wrote, but based on inputs from others in the team in Singapore, which explains basically what the situation is in Singapore, what the team is like, what the team has done so far, and then some analysis and commentary on the automatically generated data that serves as a signal with respect to what the uptake has been so far. The licenses were introduced only more recently in Singapore, therefore the numbers are anyway not large. It's also a small country. But we're also interested in the license mix, you know, which kind of licenses do people seem to prefer in Singapore? What factors influence that? And then some more comments about cultural and other aspects of Singapore that could be influencing perceptions of intellectual property and perceptions of open licensing, and more specifically, of course, Creative Commons in the jurisdiction. This is the kind of stuff that I have realized many people around the world who are involved in promoting and working with open licenses have in their minds, but it's very difficult to collect that knowledge in one place. A lot of it is tacit knowledge, a lot of it is knowledge which can't be quantified also, and is knowledge that is not so frequently and so easily shared. And I'm hoping that through this platform, actually, we will be able to do that by enabling for collaborative authoring and by providing a valuable, hopefully, resource. So the one purpose is that this resource would be used, first of all, by journalists are one target audience. The media is one audience where very often they ask, what is the impact of Creative Commons? Can you tell us in a specific country or around the world? Do you have any data, any indication? Then we can point them to one resource like this. Researchers, of course, people who want to understand more about the licenses, people who are interested, of course, funding bodies who are interested in funding Creative Commons or related initiatives and want to know about what the global spread is of open licensing, how many people it is reaching, and what kind of an impact it is having. Now, another thing I want to mention And I'm really happy I can actually show all this currently live. And you can visit it also yourselves. Is this other map, which is based on what we call a freedom score. Now, this is something that is more controversial, depending on where you're coming from. But I think it's pretty straightforward, at least in principle. The Creative Commons licenses, some are more restrictive, some are more permissive. You know, the BY license is the most permissive license. BY and CND, most people would agree, is the most restrictive license in the Creative Commons universe. So if you would just agree for now, so one thing one could do, let me start differently. One thing one could do is to try to look at which jurisdictions, which parts of the world might be using much more, or which online communities might be using much more the more restrictive licenses, which communities might be using the more permissive licenses, and why that might be so. Right? There is people who care about all these different hues of free culture, if you like. And there is people who might argue that only some of these qualifies as free culture and others do not. But I will not get into that debate. What I'm trying is more to present data that then people can make different things of. Now, if you would like to summarize this information, if you would like to get one index, like with respect to how much freedom there is currently in that pool we were talking about, you would like to try to collapse that information, right? If everybody would be using BY and CND, you would say, well, this is actually kind of getting restrictive, right? This is not as free as some people would like it to be. If everybody is using the BY license, this is actually, you know, a very positive development from some perspectives. You know, maybe a worrisome development from other perspectives, but in any case, it signals something different from if everybody would be using the more restrictive licenses in Creative Commons. So one way in which we do it is we give a somewhat arbitrary score of 1 to a BY license, a score of 6 to, of 6 to a BY license, a score of 1 to the BY and CND license, right, which we call a freedom score. Right? Then you can give accordingly also other scores. They don't have to be equidistant. You can give also other scores to the other licenses in between. The way we're doing it, based on the commercial freedoms they afford and based on the creative freedoms they afford. Right? Based on that, we come with a weighted average, basically, based on the percentage use of each license and the score we attribute to each license. We come to an average which can vary between 1 and 6. Right? If everybody would be using BY and CND, the score would be 1. Everybody uses BY, the score would be 6. Right? And so the middle would be 3.5. And if we look again here at the current score, so to say, for Creative Commons licenses, that would be the 3.29. And this has been actually, you cannot see it here, but I have somewhere a time series. It has been pretty much constant over 3-4 years now. Which I think is interesting in how it signals that Creative Commons is actually striking a balance between, you know, those who want to license in more restrictive fashion and those who want to license in a much more permissive fashion. But what's also interesting is we can actually automatically then collect data or interpret the same data in terms of freedom around the world, in terms of the freedom of the licenses, or the freedom that the licensees actually are confronted with when they use Creative Commons content. When they try to use content from the pool, how many uses they are able to make of that content. And there are some interesting examples there. You cannot, again, what interests me is Asia. And one interesting thing is in a lot of the Asian jurisdictions, again, if you believe this data, which, as I said, is not super reliable, not at all, actually, but it gives us... It's search engine data, right? So it's amenable to a few kinds of errors, but it's the best I have currently. You will notice that the licensing in Asia, in East Asia, is generally more restrictive. Deeper blue would be, again, actually a higher freedom score. And the scores are, you know, here you can see 2.47, 1.76, 2.98. Thailand actually used to have much higher number. Now it's lower, because, again, the data has quite some noise in it, basically we try to look at it over longer time spans to try to make better sense of it. But generally, one interesting example is, for example, Korea. Now, if my friends from Korea are watching this, they may not be very happy I mentioned them, but I do like them very much, and we are friends. That's why I mentioned them. And they have, the Korean team is very strong, and even though it is a small, though very networked nation, of course, they have had very high volume of use of Creative Commons licenses. And that is also seen here in the map of global adoption, right? They are among the top 20% of countries around the world in terms of adoption. They're among the top 10 countries. But when it comes to the freedom score, it's extremely low. Right? And if we zoom into Korea, which does not have an article yet, which I hope somebody will write explaining, you know, these kind of situations, but I've had many discussions with them, you see that in terms of freedom, it would rank, according to this definition of freedom that I gave, as 51 out of 52 in the world. Right? This is not, yet again, very different from other countries in the world, but the interesting thing is once you make this data public, and once you start discussing this and presenting it to in conferences where the people who work on promoting the licenses are present, it makes them really think about what it is that they are doing, whether they're doing it right or whether they're not, whether there's anything they need to change or not. And generally, I tend to present the data without any particular bias. I try at least to not have any bias with respect to what the data can say. And people read different things into it. So in this case in particular, it has led the Korean team to reflect a lot on why this is happening, on whether perhaps they have been focusing too much on promoting Creative Commons licenses as a paradigm, as a brand. You can see it in different ways, and haven't been thinking so much about explaining to people the different benefits of using also some of the more liberal licenses where this is appropriate. They have also come up with other theories that perhaps Koreans do not understand very much what we call remix culture, and therefore don't see, for example, a reason why this would allow for the creation of derivatives. Right? They care more for the works being shareable, and if they can be shareable, at least non-commercially, with a buy and C&D, that's good. That's enough. Right? But the interesting thing is actually this has made them go through this process and think about these topics. There's many more examples, but if you would let me go back for a second, these are slides I used for the case where we don't have access to the internet. But something I want to mention is one of the issues we still have with that wiki also technically is synchronization issues. Now, if you imagine that you have a wiki with live data and people adding commentary that's referring to that data, you start having the issue that the data is updated, the commentary is outdated. And it's difficult to synchronize the two in a meaningful way. You know? And I've had a few discussions with different people about this, and it's not a very easy thing because generally a media wiki installation does not really account for that. If you look also at Wikipedia, most of the data there is just static, it's just copy-pasted there. Right, and then people write an article around that. Very quickly, it's maybe outdated. Then maybe somebody needs to update it again and so on. But this is not what we're trying to do here. So there are still some issues with how to make this better. Now, the other part of the equation on the right-hand side of the pool that I was talking about earlier is how much is actually being remixed and what kind of relationships are created through remixing. This is actually where we get to the meat maybe of the part because here we're talking about real impact in terms of people taking that shared content and doing something with it. When it comes to remixing, well, we need to understand really who is just contributing new stuff, who is remixing stuff, who is remixing from whom. We need more detail. Therefore, we need to go a bit more down that scale where we look at more specific communities, where we need to look at richer data sets. But we inevitably look at smaller scale. And one community we focused on so far was the CC Mixter community, which is well known in some circles for being a prototype online remixing community, which was spun off from Creative Commons themselves to demonstrate the benefits of a remix culture and the licenses. So everything on CC Mixer is licensed under Creative Commons and can be remixed. The nice thing about this community is that apart from being a great community of amateur and professional musicians, it actually keeps track. You can see on the lower right-hand side, it keeps track of the licenses used for all the different content and of who is reusing from whom. So every time I upload a track to this community, I have to declare which other tracks I used for my new remix, and it will keep track of that, and the user then who comes here and views a particular piece and likes it, the sound of it maybe, can go and click on the different samples that have been used for this and find out who wrote those. And in that sense, you can actually keep clicking until you come up with a whole, you can see a whole chain of influences, right? From some tracks which were maybe published in this community a couple of years ago until something which was published just now and uses some of these older tracks. This is interesting for me because it allows us to track remixing over multiple generations of remixers. And this is what it looks like if you do it. So I like this picture, so I show it to every audience I get a chance to show it to. Because for me, this was the first kind of large-scale visualization of remix culture that I saw. And I was quite proud, I guess, because you know my team and I, after some trouble of getting understanding the data and so on, were able to create it. And somebody said it looks like a Category 5, actually, in a recent conference. Maybe that's part of the appeal. I don't know. So this here, every node represents an uploaded track on this community. And every link represents a reuse of one track in another track. Right? So these are all remixing relationships at the level of the content itself. The size of the bubbles, the size of the nodes, is relative to the out degree. That means the number of links coming out of a node. So the number of times that something has been remixed. One thing which is interesting is that this is actually forms, except for this little bunch here in the center that you see, which is not central in any way, just the algorithm dumps it over there. Except for that, this small set of subnetworks, the rest of the network is entirely connected. And there isn't like independent islands being formed based on genre, on friendships, and so on, which is what I was expecting to see initially. But we do see some areas of concentrated activity, the more darker-shaped areas, and we do see that some tracks receive disproportionately high numbers of remixes. These are the larger ones that you see, which tend to have a lot of neighbors around them, which are the remixes created. Oh, so the I have some information here. So the maximum path length is actually 6, which I was surprised to see. But there's only one, right? That has this length. The maximum path length is 6. It means that somebody actually remixed a remix of a remix of a remix and 6 times. So there was a 6th generation remix, if you like. But generally, the number of works per generation drops quite steeply after the first generation, right? Most people remix originals. Some people remix remixes of remixes, and then it drops off quite steeply after that. Nevertheless, remixing in this community accounts for more than half of the total production volume, even if about 60% of the uploaded original items never get remixed. Of course, this is a community very focused on remixing, but nevertheless, this is kind of an interesting, I think, data point for how enabling remixing can boost incredibly the content produced by an online community. But I have to mention also that 33% of Generation 1 remixes, so remixes of originals, so to say, are contest entries. This community, like many similar communities, has very much also depended or utilized, I should say, contests to boost activity in the community. This is usually situations where a well-known or very well-known musician will make some content available in this community under a Creative Commons license, and the community will organize together with a musician or a label a contest where the best remixers will be rewarded, usually in some non-monetary fashion. Sometimes in some communities this means actually in-kind rewards in terms of music gear, or it will mean inclusion on some compilation CD, reputation basically, and spread of one's work. Now this is the same picture if we group all the content by author, right? By musician or remixer, if you like. So now the links mean that if one, I say author here as a generalization basically, if one user has actually remixed at least one work from another user, there will be a link between them. Now this is a very different picture, although the same algorithm was used. And interestingly here you can see that in the center of the users, of the user community, as defined by remixing relationships, there is a core of a relatively smaller number of users who are very active, they're producing a lot of stuff, they seem to be more densely connected. It's black, right? Seems to be more densely connected. We can see that in more detail. And there is a lot of more, there's a few more peripheral users who often are shaped in this fan-like structure. And these are seem to be authors who are involved in contests. That was our suspicion, actually, and that happens to be true. These seem to be authors who are one-time contributors only, who are attracted to the community through contests, but who do not actually become part of the community's core. Well, let's look at that in some more detail. This is an example of a specific contest. This was the most popular contest in the community. And this is the contest ego network, basically showing all the links between all the nodes that are connected with the original source material for this contest. So here we can see all the authors who actually remixed this work as part of the contest. Of course, yes, we see that a lot of them, because the size also of the node is small, that means that it's generally authors who didn't contribute anything outside of that contest. They did not remix works of others. They don't have links to others. You can see that mostly on the left-hand side, right? And the size of the node is very small, which here the size is relative to the number of uploads that this user made, right? These are users who basically joined the community for the contest, submitted something, never did anything after that. So it looks like contests are maybe attracting a lot of opportunistic, if you like, behavior. Or you might call it with different adjectives, some of those, having more positive or more negative connotations. But we see also on the lower right side corner that a lot, there is a core of users who are also participating in contests and who tend to form reciprocal links with each other. It's not maybe very clear here. They are made more thicker, some of the lines, to show that some of the links are reciprocal between these guys. It means they tend to remix each other's work. And they tend to be those that are most active in uploading stuff to the community. These are, again, people who belong to the core. There's some more analysis that we did. This is what's called the bow tie analysis, which helped us identify that there is in the community of authors in this on CC Mixter a strongly connected core of about 12% of the authors. And that core, there is an in component of those who are actually whose works are being reused by the core, and there is an out component who are reusing the works of those in the core. And there is very huge tendrils. This is about 50% of the authors. These tendrils actually are what you might call waste again, in the sense that of course, this is, you know, this is I'm making now a normative statement about whether it's waste or not, but this is how sometimes we think about it. It's for sure more peripheral activity, that would be more correct to say. These are authors who never actually integrate with the core of the community. If any of you are familiar with this kind of analysis, I don't have much time to go in depth into that here. It was initially used to characterize the structure of the web in a paper a few years ago. Now, what we try to do is try to remove contests and all their after effects artificially after the fact by tracing the contests, everything that was submitted as part of a contest, and everything that ever used parts of a track from a contest, even after the contest had finished, and remove all these tracks, assume they never happened, right? And see how many authors are still left in the community. So authors who did something outside of contests. And this is the picture to the right. And we see that indeed, you know, these more peripheral tendrils in the structure of the community were actually attributable largely to contests. The core, here you see it in percentage. It looks higher in percentage because the tendrils are gone, but essentially the core decreased by a very small absolute number. Means that if the contests would have never happened, the authors who are in the core would mostly be the same authors, so to say. Right? The statement also needs to be qualified, but simply speaking, that's what it means. Contests have had minimal impact in introducing new members to the core, in actually making them a highly connected, highly productive member of the community. We did also what is called a motif analysis, in which you try to identify specific patterns of relationships between small numbers of nodes in your network. So in this particular case, we try to see what kind of patterns of relationships are created through remixing, and also test that statistically, whether these are significant statistically or whether they could be the result of random permutations. And the most significant and frequent one is, of course, the branching pattern, where out of one work, right, two new works come. But also there is a significant, although much less frequent, merge pattern and chain pattern. If you want to see more numbers on this, I have a paper you can look at that. Now specifically, the branch pattern becomes much more dominant in the presence of contests, obviously, because contests tend to create this relationship where something is posted online and people are being asked really to remix it. Usually the thing that is posted online comes from somebody that's considered more prominent than most of the remixers, right? Or hugely more prominent. It could be often a famous star and the fan base of the star. In a way, this is creating, it implies a hierarchy of client server, of star to fan base, which some people take issue with, and some people might say is also not necessarily in the spirit of a sharing economy. That is something that is discussed more in the memoirs of Victor Stone, as I said, who is the administrator and founder of the one of the founders of the community. But we do notice that in the author network, there is a whole range of other patterns that the second and the third row, which include at least one reciprocal link. These are patterns which appear in the author network, which don't appear so often, but they appear significantly more often than in the random case. So we know that they are statistically important. And these patterns indicate reciprocal ties. These indicate more peer-like relationships. I remix from you, you remix from me. How many times would you think that would happen between a famous music band and their fans? Not very often, most likely. And therefore, these are the kind of patterns that appear more in the core of the network, and which are indicative of the fact that members of the core of the network see each other more as peers. They see more eye to eye, if you like. Now, one last point. Victor Storm, in his memoirs, influenced also by Lessig's book, in which he provided also inputs, mentions that the community got tired of contests at some point because they organized many, and that contests are maybe also something that is more fitting the commercial economy than the sharing economy. On the other hand, there is several academics who argue that communities also need challenges, need contests, and probably also some practitioners will attest to that as well, in order to focus their energies. And that this can actually strengthen a sense of community. And so there's a question in my mind still whether contests are wasteful or not. And what is interesting here is this is actually a chart showing the growth of the community in terms of new registrations and new uploads over a period of over 3 years. And the jagged lines are daily values or actually 30-day averages. And the continuous lines are the cumulative values, showing how the community has been growing. And all the spikes you see, or most of them, are actually attributable to contest deadlines. When there's a contest deadline, many people sign in, they post something, and then after all that, you know, it quiets down again. But what I thought was interesting is that the community had been growing at about a steady pace for some time. And then at the point that I have noted there, it actually started growing at about twice actually from the scale there, it's not very clear to see. I think it's even more than twice. I have to look it up. The pace that it used to grow with. And this coincided with the deadline of their most popular contest that I showed you earlier. So is that coincidental? I do not know yet. Or does it indicate that contests, because of the increased attention and the increased amount of activity, actually generate some useful network effects in terms of reputation, higher visibility in the community, a larger audience for everybody's works, and therefore I can help propel a community to a higher plateau of growth? In that sense, I'm still not sure that the amount of waste that can be generated from this kind of more competitive activity is actually a problem necessarily to a community, or whether the benefits actually, in the end, outweigh the additional costs of introducing competition. And with that, I will leave you for now, and I will be happy to answer some questions.
Do you track, or can you track, break down the numbers by media types, whether it's music, is it writing? And second of all, do you have any figures on public domain, or is it purely CC?
The short answer to both is no. It is difficult to track media types because this information, the metadata on whether something is media types or not, is often not available. That refers, I guess, to the Creative Commons search, right? And on the public domain, again, it's difficult to tell, again, automatically what is public domain and what is not. There is a Creative Commons public domain dedication, which we are not tracking, even because I don't think its use is that significant. There's a lot of public domain works that don't use that particular dedication, and therefore are harder to track. I would be interested in doing that if I knew how.
That's exactly my question, if you were tracking the type of media, because I think the importance of a question like that is related to what type of culture is emerging within which kind of community. So you have the video community, you have the music community, and so on. And for example, who is influenced who? You know, how much the open source, the software community has influenced all the other communities or not, etc. When you license the Creative Commons, you can point the type of work. Do you have access to that kind of information? I think it's not in the metadata, but there is this alternative of viewpoint in the type of media? Does creative can you assess that information, or is it a clear information to have at least kind of a sample of what's going on?
It is not impossible to assess it. Yeah.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Okay.
David, I was just building upon your question of type of media and why that's important. And that Creative Commons have that question, so maybe some information we could get.
Okay, so let me repeat also that the question was about whether we can actually tell what kind of media these licenses refer to, and what kind of media might be licensed more under Creative Commons licenses, and what kind of influences there might be from one community to the other. It is not impossible to do that, but what we have done so far has been very incomplete. So one thing one can do is actually try to do a series of studies on specific communities which use Creative Commons licensed content and are known to deal with different media types. So you could look at licensing preferences on Flickr and other such websites. Right? You could look at a few music communities. You could look at a few blog aggregators and so on. You can try from that to derive some measure for how bloggers think about licensing, musicians, photographers, others, visual artists, and so on. That's something that we started doing, and the initial results indicated that there is many factors which come into play again. It's kind of difficult to say whether musicians think about copyright, specifically about open licensing, very differently from visual artists, for example. Because different music communities, again, and different music labels who might use Creative Commons licenses would have a different model in their mind, different constituents. So actually the people who are involved in what they want to achieve will also influence that. Photographers do seem to be more protective of their work than musicians, if you like. That's one thing I seem to have noticed so far. But generally speaking, Creative Commons, when you license something under Creative Commons, you can include metadata in the page, which can include also the media type. But when we look at the backlink search, which I explained earlier, we're not looking at that metadata. And generally, when we do search, that search usually doesn't allow for metadata because the implementations of such search by Google and Yahoo and others are not complete. So usually there you need to look at specific communities and try to track a few of them and do a study in that manner, right? Which I would be happy to do with people who might be interested in that because we need more hands.
If photographers are more restrictive than musicians, do you think that reflects some concern that the photographers concerned that their work would be, you know, misused to create something that you know, a false image, which is much less of an issue for music?
Yeah, so I have written something about that in an older article, and I have to say that we don't have conclusive data on that, but most people, when I mention that, they usually nod in agreement, like, yeah, you know, photographers are like that. I think it has to do with the medium a lot. Music, still to all intents and purposes, is mostly used for entertainment and for other similar aesthetic or cultural purposes. Photographs are also used for documentation, right? So there's issues with respect to trying to protect the integrity of the photograph, its message, and of the people on the photograph. And there could be also something related with the fact that musicians have become more used to the concept of remixing, with the idea that music is becoming more freely available online and they can't stop that. I'm not sure photographers are as much used to the idea as musicians are.
Other musicians' works for hundreds of years before any of this technology arrived.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think in music, perhaps remixing is much more widespread than collage in photography, although it's difficult to make such statements. But yeah.
I'm looking at the monitor. And I wonder, I mean, the countries that you have on the map are those 50 countries that have the license kind of adopted to the legal system in those countries?
Yes.
Okay.
These are countries where teams of volunteers have taken the initiative to translate the licenses to the local language and to the local legal tradition so as to create a more country-specific version of the generic Creative Commons licenses.
But it doesn't mean that those that are not colored don't have use of Creative Commons.
Those that are not colored could also be using Creative Commons licenses. Mm-hmm. They would most likely be using the unported license, which is generic. It's not customized to any specific country. Or often they might be using licenses of countries that have a similar culture or language. So I was told, for example, by some from Latin America that they would be using the Spanish licenses sometimes, maybe also because they would tend to frequent some of the same Spanish-speaking communities. If they wouldn't have, yeah, so that is still an issue. And also if you go on to Flickr, for example, I think still today, I'm not sure whether they allow you, but it used to be the case they were not allowing you to choose your jurisdiction and say, I'm a creator in Argentina, I want to use the Argentinian Creative Commons license, right? Everybody had to use one license.
Not really related, but have you thought about, because I see that on the map you have absolute numbers of how many Creative Commons licenses are there in a specific country. Have you thought about creating kind of an index that would take into account internet penetration rates, for example?
Yes.
Because, like, absolute numbers.
I've done some of that already. Well, what we did some time ago, there's a paper which we presented a couple of years ago at the TPRC conference, which looked at different indicators like that, also trying to look at correlations, see whether we can make anything out of this. Somebody could try to normalize these numbers, for example, based on internet penetration. It would be an obvious thing to do. That is also if you're trying to sort of rank or evaluate the countries in that respect. And I should mention also here that it's not accurate to interpret this as use of Creative Commons in these countries. First of all, because people might be using different licenses as well. And secondly, because what this reflects is use of the jurisdiction-specific license, right? So the numbers under Spain mean use of the Spanish license, right? Many of these users would probably be in Spain, but it's not the same thing. So yeah, this is a good point, we should do that.
Yeah, one thing I thought might be interesting is looking at each of those countries or each of those jurisdiction-specific licenses, but what are the top communities that are linking to those licenses? What are the top communities that have Creative Commons content? And then is it a small number of communities that account for most of it? Are there a whole bunch? You know, how is it sort of distributed as far as, you know, in a small number of communities or the large number of communities? Just looking maybe at the domains that are linking to the license.
That would be a bit similar maybe to what also John Kelly and others have been presenting here with respect to the structures of blogospheres around the world. That would be interesting. For example, in Korea, I think part of the growth there is attributable to the fact that some major portals in Korea have decided to use Creative Commons licenses for everything that's posted on them. This kind of information is relatively difficult to collect for such a large number of jurisdictions. And I'm hoping to be able to collect more of this by motivating people to contribute to this online wiki so we can understand more of that. So in some cases, yeah, it's sometimes you see some large spikes attributable to that. In Taiwan, a National Digital Archive of Taiwan, which has a huge digital collection, decided to license all of it under Creative Commons. There you have suddenly a huge spike, right? The more difficult, actually, is to track all the little guys. Like, how many bloggers are there in the world who might be hosting their own blogs or hosting them in a very great number of different services who might be using Creative Commons licenses? Maybe they're actually a significant constituency, but it's hard to collect all these numbers. And I was actually discussing with John Kelly how to do that.
I think I got some sense when you were talking about the Mapping the Commons project about some of the, I guess, benefits or impacts that you're seeing from discussing that work with the CC project leads in various places and leading it to kind of facilitate more comparison across the CC community of how licensing practices work and vary and change and things like that. In terms of the kind of, because there's another piece of it I sense that's sort of like data collection for analysis and comparison with other kinds of licensing practices, which maybe comes out equally well in the stuff about CC Mixter. But I guess I was curious, in terms of the data collection side of the mapping project, are there pieces of that that you're hoping to sort of use to either compare with other kinds of licensing practices, or, I mean, what sort of aspirations do you have for that as a data collection project, I guess?
That is a pretty broad question. So,
say you don't have to.
Yeah, no, maybe what will help is to explain that in the very beginning, the thing that motivated me to start doing this in the first place, and back then I contacted Larry, who put me in touch with other people and said, yes, we want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Creative Commons has an inherent interest in doing this, right? They want to do that because they want to understand their own constituents, right? They want to understand their users and where they are and what they're doing. You can imagine that coordinating a project across over 50 countries is actually pretty taxing. My interest was in eventually, once we have a lot of data, once we have all the data we could ever wish for, right, we would be able to try to track changing attitudes around the world with respect to openness.
Mm-hmm.
Openness in sharing, openness in using such resources rather than resorting to commercially licensed resources and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you track only Creative Commons licenses and their use, you cannot say you now have a measure of global openness, right? But if you can do the same for free software licenses, if you can do the same for other types of open content licenses,
I would think you'd need to include proprietary licenses as well, right?
If you can also include proprietary licenses, which would have different terms, and some of these licenses would again qualify as maybe more flexible, and some of these would qualify as terrible licenses, then you could also include these, and then you could try to see. What I wanted to see is, very simply speaking, is the world moving towards a more open future?
Right, okay.
Right?
That's helpful.
Right, because if you live in my small bubble or in the Berkman bubble or whatever other bubble you may live in or inside the San Francisco bubble, you know, you will think that the world is moving towards more open licensing, but that is not necessarily the case at a large scale and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that was like one of the greater visions behind this, although that is a long way out.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. I knew it's going to be a pie in the sky.
Does that kind of
no, definitely explain? That helps explain it a lot. So thank you. Well, should we say thank you and say that you'll be around for questions for a little while afterwards? Or?
Yes, I will be a bit around for more questions if anybody has any.
All right, thanks everyone.